Good afternoon, this is Paul Sigrist for the National Park Service. Today is Monday, August 28th, 1995. I'm in the town of Brunswick, which is outside of Troy, New York, and I'm here with Fred Kunz. Mr. Kunz was born in Paraguay, born of German parents, and came to the United States in 1927 when he was 9 months old. And he's going to relay to us his history of his parents and why they came here. And they remembered very vividly coming through Ellis Island also in 1927. Mr. Kunz, can we begin by you giving me your birth date, please?
My birthday is July 17th, 1926.
And what is your full name, please? Could you say it for us?
Fred William Kunz, K-U-N-Z.
And Fred, Frederick?
It's Frederick.
And
William.
Can you spell Frederick, please?
F-R-E-D-R-I-C-K.
Okay. Where in Paraguay were you born?
I was born in Villa Rica.
Can you spell that, please?
V-I-L-L-A-R-I-C-A.
And tell me a little bit about Villa Rica.
Well, Villa Rica, according to my parents, was a very small town, not too far away from Asuncion. But since my dad had the position of being the overseer of a mahogany plantation, we were out in the woods, primarily out in the forest, and that's one of the reasons my mother couldn't take the climate, and one of the basic reasons that we came to this country was to get back to the temperate zone.
Can you tell me a little bit about where Paraguay lies in the continent?
Yes, Paraguay is sandwiched in between Argentina and Brazil, and Uruguay is on the coast of South America, and Paraguay is interior, and there's one large river that goes through the I've forgotten the name of it now. La Plata, I think it's the La Plata River that runs through there.
You said that it was near Asuncion?
Asuncion, yes.
Can you spell that, please?
A-S-U-N-C-I-O-N.
I guess the best way to start this interview would be to talk about your parents in Germany and why they went to Paraguay. What was your father's name?
My father's name was Leopold.
And tell me a little bit about his family background in Germany, that sort of thing.
He was born in Karlsruhe, which is a fairly large city in Germany. And
can you spell that too, please?
K-A-R-L-S-R-U-H-E, Karlsruhe. And my father went to the schools, and he became a tool and die maker, or machinist. And just as he was about to go to a university, he decided he wanted to go to the university. World War I broke out, and he was in World War I for 4 years, in the German army, of course. And after the war, he married during the war my mother, whose name was Frida Klingler, her maiden name.
Can you Klingler. Spell Frida N. Klingler?
F-R-I-E-D-A K-L-I-N-G-L-E-R, Klingler. And they married during the war, and one of my brothers was born, and he passed away during the war. And then my parents had George and my sister Mary. She was called Maria in German, and George was Horst, H-O-R-S-T, but because when he was a small child, they used to call him Horst. He changed it to George. But anyway, my dad didn't like the political climate over there, plus the fact that after the World War I, things were really economically bad for the Germans. So there was an opportunity to go to South America to act as an overseer of a plantation where the rare woods would be sent back to Germany, and they would use them for veneers on furniture and so on. So he took that position, and he left, as I recall seeing in some of the papers, somewhere about 1925, 24, 25, they went to Paraguay. And while they were down there, they had took care of overseeing the mahogany plantation and sending the wood back to Germany for furniture manufacture.
Can you tell me anything about your father's service during World War I? Did he ever speak about that experience?
Oh yes, yes. He was in Belgium and in France during the war. And he was wounded once from shrapnel. He was in the artillery.
Are there stories that he used to tell about that you could relate to us on tape?
Yes. He mentioned several times during the course of the war that in the artillery, toward the end of the war, things were getting pretty bad, and the shells weren't firing the way they should have fired. And also that there was hardly any food for them. They were almost starving. And it was quite a rough time on him. He was gassed twice, too. He was in the trench warfare. They used gas at that time.
Do you know what would happen if you were gassed? What was the outcome?
Well, the outcome was that you're pretty much paralyzed. He was sent to the hospital, where he recuperated, and then he was sent back in again. And he had quite a few friends were killed in that war. My mother worked as she was back at the home front. She was making shells. So she learned the trade of turning shells to their proper size.
Where was that done?
That was done in Karlsruhe. In Germany.
But is it a factory job?
Oh, yes, it was a factory, yes.
You mentioned that your parents married during the war. Can
yes.
you tell me how they met and how that all came?
Well, they were school children, and my dad was on the stocky side. So they used to say, "Run, here comes the fat guy," because when they were friends, the girls he would chase them, and then eventually he got to know my mother, and then their friendship blossomed into love, and then they were married during the war in 1917.
Can you tell me a little bit about your father's personality?
He was strict. He was a very strict person, but he was a lovable guy, and he took good care of his family. He took very good care of his family. He always worked hard, and he was a real good father to me, and to my brother and sister too, of course. He used the rod occasionally, but only when we really needed it.
What kinds of things did your father like to do for recreation?
He was a great reader. He read a lot, and he was always working at the house.
What kinds of things did he do?
He could do anything. He could be a plumber. He was a part electrician. He was a carpenter, and he could do almost anything that was associated with household.
Just a handy kind of
everything. And he was a very good machinist, and he was a very excellent mechanic too, when it came to fixing water pumps and things like that. Because that was one of his occupations when he was working for the Niagara Mohawk.
Once they
were here, yes.
Let me ask you the same question about your mom. Can you describe her personality for
me? Oh, she was a very loving mother, very religious. And we were brought up to go to church every Sunday. And also, we were all sent to parochial schools, Catholic parochial schools.
And the family was Catholic?
And the family was Catholic, Roman Catholic.
You said that your mother was religious. Is there a story you can tell that reflects how religious she was?
Well, she would take us and bring us to Mass in the morning, in fact. And that was one of her reasons for moving to where I live today, well, we lived down here, a few blocks away, was to be within walking distance of a Catholic church so that she could go to Mass during the day.
Did she teach you any prayers?
Oh, yes. We were taught all the Our Father and Hail Mary and so on.
Can you say a prayer for us on tape in German? Do you remember any?
Well, we used to say the prayer before meals. We always said that. O Gott, von dem wir alles haben, wir preisen dich für deine Gaben. Du speisest uns, weil du uns liebst, und segne auch, was du uns gibst. Amen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What's the translation, roughly?
O God, thank you for the meal we are about to eat, and we praise you for forever.
Talk about the kinds of recreational things your mother liked to do.
Well, Mom was a great seamstress. She, in fact, at one time she used to make our clothing, and she used to like to knit and crochet, and she was a cook. She was a great cook.
Tell me some of the things that she cooked.
Some of the things primarily were donuts. She had a special Berliner, they call them, which are donuts which are filled with jelly on the inside. So she'd make a big pot of soup, and then we'd have that Berliner, the Berliners and other donuts to eat.
Can you spell Berliner, please?
Berliner.
Like the city.
Like the city, yeah. Well, that's where they were originally made, I guess. And she used to make these huge cakes, onion cakes and plum cakes. And again, that was always a big pot of soup and the cake. That went with it. But she could cook many other things.
Very. Now, you said earlier that you believe your parents went to Paraguay in 1926?
No, that's when I was born.
25.
Somewhere around, somewhere around the 24, 25 year time span.
I'm curious what your father relayed to you about that experience of going to Paraguay as opposed to what your mother may have relayed to you about going to Paraguay.
He was anxious to get there because it was an adventure to him. But Mom was a little reluctant because she wasn't used to the jungle facilities, you know.
Do you know how much about that she knew before she got there?
I don't believe she knew too much. She had much of a feeling for that. I think she was somewhat surprised when she got there. Again, this is back in the 20s, and you didn't have the television, and the only thing you could tell was from books and brochures.
Did either of them ever relay to you any information about the ocean crossing to Paraguay?
They just mentioned it was a normal crossing. No specific problems.
Was there a German population in Paraguay?
Yes, there was. I think it was somewhere in the Asunción region.
And what sorts of things, if you know, were the Germans involved in doing in that part of the world?
I think primarily they were in agriculture, for one thing, and also trying to get involved in governmental positions such that they could build these countries up. You might say they were the fourth world country in those days.
Do you know if your father had any kind of experience when he was in Germany, experience like what he would be doing once he got to Paraguay? How did he get that job, I guess is what I'm asking.
I think he just applied for it. He saw an ad in the newspaper and he went and applied for it. And because of the conditions back in Germany at that time, he didn't like the political ramifications that were starting, so he just wanted to leave.
What were the economic problems going on in Germany?
Well, basically they had a very, very high inflation rate. In order for you to to buy your groceries, the wives would go to the factory. They were paid every twice a day because of the inflation rate. So the wives would go to the factories, the husbands would give them the money, and then the wives would go to the store and buy hard goods and food, because the following afternoon the prices would go up. So that's how bad it was. And if, in fact, eventually the postage stamps cost 1 billion marks because of the inflation rate. And that just, and all their savings were completely wiped out.
And what was the political climate? What didn't he like about the
political? Well, the political climate was there was no direction, no leadership. The Weimar Republic, as it was in those days, was floundering, and the people had very little to eat, and the inflation rate was so high, and that was it primarily.
I should say, for the sake of the tape, that Weimar is spelled
Weimar.
Thank you. All right, so your parents got to Paraguay, and there's a brother and a sister.
My brother and sister were born in Germany and came along, right.
Tell me what you know about their life in Paraguay.
It was pretty strange to them, because the climate was hot, and there was very little civilization in the section where they were living, because it was in the jungle, in the forest.
Do you know any details about the actual structure that they were living
yes.
in?
Yes, I had some pictures. We've misplaced them somewhere, but we had some pictures where it looked just like a thatched roof made from straw and a few sides, and that was it. It was a very, very primeval, if you want to call it that.
Well, sure, and coming from an industrial country like Germany.
Yeah, where the streets were all had cobblestones, and then going there where everything was horseback. Everything was, of course, in those days, everything was horseback and wagon, horse and wagon, and in the big ruts, and especially the torrential rains. They used to tell us stories about that. They'd have to put umbrellas up because it rained through the roofs, and then they also had ants. The army ants would come through every once in a while and eat anything that in sight, practically.
Are there any stories from your family about encounters with wild animals or reptiles?
Primarily my brother. He was fooling around with a frog one time with a stick, and he poked the frog, and the frog spit. And it spit out some solution, and it hit him right in the eye. And it formed a coating right over his eye. And my parents took it and washed it out, and so he didn't lose his sight, but he could have lost it. And one time my mother was bathing with us, and she felt a sting in her foot. This was in a stream close by. And she took her foot out, and she noticed blood, and there was a native woman, an Indian. She said to her, get out quick, in Spanish, or in Guarani, which is their local language there. And it turned out that she was bitten by a piranha. So it was a good time to get out of the water.
Can you spell the name of the local language, please?
Guarani, I think it's Guarani, Guarani. It's a combination between Spanish and the Indian language, Guarani.
So your family is contending with piranhas and poisonous frogs and all these kinds of things they don't have in Germany.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, for instance, schooling. Did your brother and sister go to school, or?
They were pretty young at that time. It was mostly home taught. They were mostly home taught until we came to this country.
Were there any stories that your family has related to you about your birth and the circumstances that surround
you? Oh, yes, yes. It turned out that in this part of the country, there were mostly natives, so that and people that had lived there for a long time, and consequently, when I was born, they had an Indian midwife to help my mother out. My father was probably boiling hot water, as they show in the movies usually. When I was born, I was blonde, white, almost white blonde, and this created a big furor because they had never seen anyone like that before. So they made a big issue, a big thing out of that. They had people coming from various parts of the forest coming in to look to see this child that was white with white hair. But that's the story they told me. I can't verify that, of course. I don't have the hair anymore either.
Can you tell me something, and maybe you can't, but if you know anything about the relationship between the German population and the native Indian population there?
They thought quite highly of the Germans down there at that time, because they always tried to teach them the right, what they thought was the right way to do things, you know, to grow more crops and to build up the country. So they had a very good reputation there.
Can you talk a little bit about what you know about your father's work on the plantation and exactly what that entailed?
Well, my dad's primary job was to go out into the forest and identify those trees to be cut and shipped back, of course. And he also had to identify the type of tree. And he learned some forestry just before he left. They taught him of what types to send and so on and so forth, and the lengths and the best lengths to send and so on. So
did he ever tell you what to look for in a mahogany tree? I mean, all sorts of things that.
Yeah, he never told me about in the tree itself. But one time, we had the job of locally picking out a casket for someone that had died. And he went up to the casket, and the person at the store, at the place, the display room, said, "Oh, that's solid mahogany." So my dad went up, and he just blew on it a little bit and let the moisture from his breath get on it. And then he just wiped it off, and he said, "No." He said, "That's veneer." So he had that kind of a feeling for the woods.
And he brought his knowledge with him. He brought
his knowledge with him. Yes.
Is there anything else that your parents relayed to you about their existence in Paraguay that we haven't touched upon?
Yes, I think primarily there were some uprisings too. Sometimes the natives would start getting dissatisfied with their condition, perhaps, or for one reason or another, and they would kill people. And one of my dad's friends was killed down there. And they would also identify how they would always drink mate, M-A-T-T-E. They would have a gourd, which is dried out and it's hollowed on the inside, and they would put the mate in there and then pour hot water in it and then drink it with a metal straw. In fact, I have one in my drawer in there. But I was brought up with mate. They always gave me a little bit of that, and it's delicious tea.
What is it made out of?
It's a tea. It's made from a plant, and they just dry it in the sun and then break it up into small pieces like a tea leaf, okay? And it's very good.
I'm curious, in retrospect now, looking back on your growing up with your parents here in Troy, did their experience in Paraguay have any profound effect on their later life in America?
I think it just rounded out their education, if you will. Because they always were able to my dad could speak Spanish pretty well, And as a result, he had made quite a few contacts with people from South America that he would meet in Troy or at picnics and things. And it was good as a social tool to be able to speak with people from Spain or South America, I should say.
Tell me why they left Paraguay.
Well, they left primarily because of the temperature, the climate, which my mother couldn't stand, and then too the lack of civilization. She wanted to get back to civilized area, and
she had enough of the
jungle life, and of course this is back in the 20s. Things were pretty rough down there. Just looking at some of the photographs.
They're still pretty rough down there. You can only imagine how rough.
Well,
tell me what you know about their leaving Paraguay, about the process and what they had to go through
okay.
to get out.
As I understand it, they wrote to my cousin here in this area, and my father's cousin, and then requested some funds be sent to them. And then my Mr. Bodimer, I'll call him Mr. Bodimer because that was my father's cousin's name.
Can you spell that too, please?
Bodemer. He took care of handling the paperwork that had to be done from this part to this area, and as you saw, I have from Mr. Oswald Heck, who was the travel bureau man locally in Schenectady. In fact, it turned out that his son eventually became the Speaker of the House in the New York State Assembly many years ago.
What was his last name?
Heck, H-E-C-K.
He was a travel agent.
Right. His father was the travel agent and took care of all the correspondence and so on and so forth. So at that point, my parents moved, since they knew that they were going to come to the States. They moved to Villarrica, which is a larger city, a slightly larger city. Well, obviously from where they were, and so they stayed at the Hotel Schlesing, and until all the funds arrived, and they went to the U.S. consulate in Asunción and took care of the paperwork there through him. So this way they could come in through a quota system.
Could you spell Schlesing, the name of the hotel?
S-C-H-L-E-S-I-N-G.
Thank you. Obviously a German hotel.
It's a German hotel.
German...
Right, right.
I should say for the sake of the tape that you have a fantastic collection of paper archives of
right,
your parents'
right.
experience, and we may be referring to them as we go
right.
on, everything, including the receipt for the ship, and we'll
right.
be talking about
right.
that. What do you know about they're getting ready to go in terms of paperwork and that sort of thing?
Just that they had to go through to come to the States. They also had to go through Buenos Aires because that's where the ship was docked, so that they had to come down through the La Plata River to Buenos Aires, where they disembarked. They pretty much had these large steamship covers. That's called them in German. They call them covers, but suitcases, very huge ones. They had several of those, as you can imagine, with three children. There's always something that they had to bring along.
What did your parents take with them from Paraguay? You mentioned the straw that
yes.
drank the matcha.
They also brought, we had a rattlesnake skin mounted. It was dried rattlesnake skin, which was about, it was about 5 feet high. And they brought that in. And they also brought a stuffed parrot, a beautiful stuffed parrot, but it wasn't allowed to come in. So they took that at Ellis Island. They, you know, there's only certain things you can bring into the country.
That's probably why they brought you to Ellis Island, because of this rattlesnake based on terror. I have another question for you. What did they take from Germany when they went to Paraguay?
Well, Dad took his army uniform. In fact, Mom later on in this country made a coat for me out of that, his old army coat. And I think he brought his knife with him. He had a rather large knife, which he could use in the jungle. Just pretty much riding equipment. I know that. He had a pair of chaps, which were leather chaps he could put on, and riding breeches. And Mom just brought, as I recall, I mean, based on her conversation, just normal clothing. But they were amazed at how hot it was. It was, sometimes it would get into the hundreds.
In Paraguay.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because they're going through a double immigration experience. And it's always interesting what people choose to bring with them.
Right,
well,
right.
Here they're not only bringing stuff from Germany, but now they're bringing stuff from Paraguay.
Right.
They end up with all of it once
right.
they get to Troy.
And then, too, the seasons were completely reversed because it's summer in the winter when it's winter in Germany. So that was quite a change for them, too.
How long did they have... Did they have to wait in Buenos Aires before they got on the ship?
I think it was only a few days, several days.
Do you know anything about the examination process or anything like that, if there even was
one? No, there wasn't. There was no examination process. They just had to go through the consulate, and they just stamped it. Since it was officially stamped by the American consulate in Asunción, so that was like, hey... You know, they're just going through this country, so it's just a transit, like a transit visa almost. They just stamped it. You've been here, and that's it.
Since we've gotten to the point about the boat, we should explain that the name of the line that they took was the Lamport Holt line.
Line, right.
Lamport and Holt, Holt. And there's a little discrepancy between some of the written paperwork and the printed paperwork.
Right.
Mentions that they took the Voltaire. The handwritten paperwork looks like it says Varibon.
V-A-R-I-B-A-N.
So we're not quite sure what ship they took.
Right.
It may have been the Voltaire or Varibon, maybe Voltaire in Spanish or in the
right.
native language
right.
or something.
Right.
But anyway, I do want to say also that we have the receipts for the ship passage.
Right.
And it cost... In American dollars,
right.
$578.62, and that would be for
all of us, for
mom,
dad, George, Mary, and myself.
I see.
That's five.
We can assume that you probably went for half fare or something.
I can't verify that, but it was third class too, by the way.
What if anything did they relate to you about the passage to New York?
It apparently was uneventful because they were probably so busy taking care of three children that they didn't have too much time to relate to other people on aboard.
Do you know anything about where the ship might have stopped prior to going to New York?
It stopped. It just went to New York. It was a direct direct from Buenos Aires to New York.
And what time of the year is this?
March. They landed in March.
March
the 23rd of 1927.
Tell me what you know about what happens to them once the ship approaches New York.
Now, you have to remember this. They were coming, it was summer in South America, okay? And they're coming up here, so it was just in the latter part of the winter here, so that they were quite cold. But they did mention that they had seen the Statue of Liberty, and they were quite impressed by it when they came through. And
And you mentioned that they had recollections of having to go to Ellis Island.
Oh, they went to Ellis Island.
What were those recollections?
That they were physically examined there, or all of us were. And then I think they stayed there overnight, and then the following day they took the train from New York City to Cohoes.
And they probably took your parrot away at Ellis Island.
They took it at immigration, wherever that was. It was probably in Ellis Island. The stuffed parrot, not a real one.
Right, right.
A live one.
And you think the family was held overnight at Ellis
Island? I think it was just an overnight stay.
I see. Anything else that you were told about the ship arriving in New York and the processing or anything else?
No, just that it went along apparently satisfactorily to them. They had no bad stories to tell, and in fact they were glad to set foot in the United States at that point.
Did anyone come to New York to meet them?
No, they had their train. As I read in Heck's Travel Bureau paper there, they had the tickets already for the train from New York City to Albany, I think it was, that's where Mr. Bodimer and his family picked our family up.
Did your mother or father ever tell you maybe things that they saw here in America that they had never seen before? Things that were new to them?
No, just the abundance of food that they had not experienced in the past. They were really, and the number of automobiles that even in the 20s were more automobiles here than they had in Europe. Of course, there are hardly any in South America at that time, in
right.
Paraguay.
Right. Where did they go to live when they first arrived? They
lived in Cohoes. They lived a week with the Bodimers. We did lived with. Week in Bodimer's, and then Dad had a temporary job as a farmer at Mr. Herb's, Herb's his farm in Cohoes, and
doing what kind of work?
Just farming, more or less working in the field, and
what kind of vegetables?
I think primarily they were planting potatoes and corn and things like that. And then, of course, his background was as a tool and die maker in Germany, or a mechanic. So he took a job with, Niagara Hudson in those days. It's Nymo today. But in those days, there was a garage down in South Troy. So he and his cousin's husband, Bodimer's, they both worked in the same place. So he was fixing the trucks primarily at that time. And then after that, he worked there a couple of years, and then there was an opportunity for him to go back into the tool and die making profession, if you want to call it that, in General Electric.
I should also say, for the sake of the tape, that Nymo, which is spelled NYMO, are the initials for Niagara Mohawk.
Niagara Mohawk.
Which is the local utility
right,
company
right.
here in upstate New York.
Right.
Where does your memory kick in? What's the earliest memory?
My earliest memory is in Cohoes when I first saw snow. I must have been 3 years old because... And I said snow in German. Of course, German was my first language because my parents were obviously from Germany. And I can still remember looking out the front window and seeing this white stuff come floating down. It's the first time I had seen it, of course. And saying Schnee, I guess, so it must have been at least three, saying Schnee in German, which is snow.
How is Schnee spelled?
S-C-H-N-E-E.
talk to me about the house in Cahos and what you remember about where you lived.
It was a two-story family. We lived downstairs, and there was another family who lived upstairs. Their name was Johnson. And there was some friction there because, immigrants at sometimes were looked down upon, and so there was a little bit of discrimination, if we put it very mildly. It wasn't that bad, according to Dad and my mother, but
it was. What would they do to?
Well, they would just do things to the children, you know. Their children would come down and plague my brother and sister to some extent, but nothing seriously. But it was just a little bit of discrimination, and especially since we couldn't speak, my parents couldn't speak English that well at that point in time, and of course my brother and sister too, the same thing. So there was a lack of communications, which is always difficult when you can't speak the same languages, if you will.
How did what old world German ways did your parents hold on to here in the United States?
Primarily discipline. They always made sure you had certain things you had to do. You had to work. You had to do certain jobs.
Do you remember some of the rules that of the house?
As we got older, of course, but as we were younger, you had to do your chores before you could leave the house, and Mom was there to check to see that they were done. And
what was your chore?
My chore. Well, we used to dust. We used to have to dust the house, and Mom was a very very sticklish about cleanliness, and. The other thing was, too, you had to take care of your clothing because you didn't get your clothing dirty. That was a no-no. There were good clothes and play clothes, you know, you could change. And then when I was younger, we used to have aprons, too. Mom made aprons for us so that you wouldn't get the clothes dirty.
Did your mother get a job here in the United States?
Yes, during the Depression, you see, right after... Dad took the job in Schenectady. Then we moved to Schenectady from Cahos, the General Electric job. We moved to Schenectady. And while we were there, Mom, we had a large flat. So what she did is she took in boarders. She took in some immigrants that came over. They would stay in the rooms, and Mom would cook for them and also do their wash.
What do you remember about those boarders specifically?
They were nice fellas, clean cut type, you know, and they were working when they were working, and then they'd come home, it was just like part of the family, because of course they were also from Germany too at that point, so that. There was a good relationship between them. They were almost like cousins, if you wanted to call them that, you know.
Now, did you speak exclusively German in the house?
We spoke exclusively German in the house, and except once we started going to school, my parents asked us to speak English to them, but they would respond in German. Okay, so we learned to speak the English in school, plus our playmates outside, and that's the way we learned the language.
Do you remember your own experience just beginning to learn English and how that affected you?
Well, I had no problems with it. It just seemed to flow pretty easily because. See, in those days, they didn't have kindergarten, the schools I went to. So you went in the first grade. So by the time you got, you went into the first grade, you pretty much had a good a reasonably intelligent, you could speak English pretty well. Now, my brother had a problem.
How old was he when they arrived?
Let's see, he was about five or six in that range. And he had to go to school in Schenectady. He started school. And he was held back a year because he couldn't speak English. But he managed okay after that. But he had a problem. My sister not, because she was younger. So in conversing with the local neighbors, we could speak English before we got into the school, but not my brother, of course, as well.
Did your parents make a concerted effort to learn English, or did they?
Oh, yes.
They approach that?
Well, they went to night school.
What do you know about their experience in night school?
My dad went to night school, but Mom went during the days when Dad was working. Okay, so she used to take me along, and this was in Schenectady. And they always gave me a coloring book or something, and sat and had me sit in the corner while these ladies were all saying the following the teacher in the pronunciation of the English. And I always remember one thing, and I knew the difference already then. The teacher would say, "The man eats the bread," and then the class would all respond, "The man eats the bread." And I knew that was wrong. Even then. But those were the kinds of things I remember at that stage. And but that's what Mom did. She wanted to learn English, and of course Dad had to, because he had to work with people, you know. So he went to night school.
Did your mother in her learning of the language, how did she approach using English out in public?
It was difficult for Mom, because she was at home most of the time, so she didn't have the luxury of working with people that much. So it was more difficult for her. But she would, with her broken English, she would still go to the store and buy things and whatever. And she would try to speak as best she could, and even though it wasn't correct English at that point.
So we're in Schenectady during the 1930s, right?
Right.
That's the time period we're talking about. Is there a strong German community?
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. There was a Turner Hall in Schenectady. Turner Hall in Schenectady, and there was what they called a Turnverein, which is a society for lifting weights and gymnastics primarily.
Can you spell that, please?
What?
Turner Verein.
Oh, Verein, V-E-R-E-I-N.
So,
Turner is
T-U-R. Turner Hall, which was a social hall, probably.
Right.
And then there was the
Verein. The which is part of the hall.
Like an athletic club.
Yeah, it's an athletic club. And they had all the weights and the dumbbells and things like that, which was brought over. That's part of the culture. The German culture is gymnastics and singing. And they also had a singing society there, too.
How in what ways did your parents socialize at that time?
At that time, they would if the hall had an affair, we would go as a family to the hall and participate of mostly the German foods and the beer, and of course I would not at that stage, but my dad would have a few with the folks, and then they'd have the activities, whichever was they'd put on an exhibit, you know, the lifting the weights and then the gymnastics, and both men. The singing society, both men and women, they would sing songs, German songs.
You said you were Catholic earlier.
Yes.
Talk about your religious life at this point.
Okay. I started going to school at St. Joseph's Academy in Schenectady. It's right in the heart of Schenectady.
This is a Catholic
school. It's a Catholic parochial school. And my brother and sister did too. After the first year, my brother went to the public school, but then they decided it was better for him to go to the Catholic school. And St. Joseph's at that time did have quite a large German population too, so it was part of the German culture to some the very little limited extent. But so we went to that school, and we'd go to Mass on Sunday, and then
was it a St. Joseph's Church?
St. Joseph's Church was right across the street from the school. It's right off State Street, or it was. It's closed now, of course. And so we went to school there. I went to the first grade there. And
do you remember there being immigrant children in school?
There were some. Yes, and in fact there were Polish children there too, Italians. Some Italian people were there too, and of course the normal English, Irish, Scotch people too. And
did the church social into your parents' social life at all? Did the church play a function? Have a function in that?
Not so much at that point. Not so much at that point, because they were still doing things at home most of the times. They didn't have time enough to socialize except for once in a while going to this German hall.
But that was that picnics. Was the major socializing.
That's the major socializing, and with just the neighbors, just the local neighbors. There was a tailor who lived. We lived in Schenectady. The first one of the houses we lived in was over a bakery, and then right next door was a tailor shop, and he happened to be German. Dolzell, his name was, and he was a widower, and so he had a daughter. So my mother more or less acted as a surrogate mother to her. So that's the way most things worked.
Were there many German merchants in Schenectady at that time?
There were quite a few, yes. Yes, quite a few. The butcher, I don't recall their names now. And there was a pharmacy, too. And that was run by Germans.
So this is a visible presence in the community.
It's a visible presence. And the tailor, of course, I pointed out. Yeah.
As you were growing up, say, through grade school and into high school, how did you think of yourself? What nationality did you think of yourself?
I always thought myself as an American, always, because it was just the German part of it was just background. I always looked at it as that way.
Were there any conflicts, especially as you got older, between the way you looked at the world versus the way your parents looked at the world?
Not really. We all felt that we were just the Americans, you know, of German heritage. And
so your parents thought of
themselves. Definitely.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Definitely. My father was a strong American.
Did he become a citizen?
Oh, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Yes, Dad became a citizen I can tell you this specifically because it's a very magic date for me. September the 10th, 1934, he became a citizen.
You're living in Schenectady.
In Schenectady at that time. And then Mom became citizen in 1936 or 37, in that time frame. It took her a little longer because she had to learn the English, okay?
Tell me about, obviously your father's becoming a citizen means something special to you. Tell me why.
Oh, well, during World War II, I wanted to get into the Navy. And I was in high school at the time. So I wanted to get my high school finished before I went into service. And it turned out that I got on an accelerated program so that I could get out in January of 1940 so that I could join the Navy. So I took a test for electronic technician, and I passed it. And I passed it. And so I was ready to go into the Navy in January of 1944. And it turned out that I was just about ready to be sworn in, and somebody called me into the office in Albany and said, "You know, you have to be a citizen for 10 years to join the Navy, to be in the Navy." So I lacked 6 months, okay? He said, "I can't accept you." And here I had done all of this work, accelerating a program to get out early so I could get into the Navy, and they wouldn't accept me. So that's why I remember. The day I was drafted was September the 10th, 1944. I was citizen 10 years, and I got in the Navy that day.
So that's why it means so much.
That's why it means so much to me.
Did your parents ever want to go back to Germany for any reason? Or did they go back to Germany?
They never went back. My dad did after the war, World War II, he did go back, and it was 1958. He had been away for 35 years.
Did he go alone?
He went by himself, yes.
Why did he want to go back?
Well, my mother had passed away, see. So he wanted to go back because he had brothers and sisters over there. And he wanted to visit them. His mother, of course, had died many years prior to that. But he wanted to go back and touch base with people, and he did.
And what were his feelings about that experience?
Oh, he really enjoyed that. Well, plus the fact my brother was over CIA at the time, and he could stay with him, in Berlin in those days. He could visit his relatives down, and of course my relatives too, but down in this Black Forest region of Germany.
What about you? Have you been either to Paraguay or to Germany?
I have never been to Paraguay. I really don't have any need to go there. It would be nice, I suppose, sometime, but I've been to Germany once. I went in 1990. I went to visit my aunts over there, and went with a Germania Hall tour. A group of us got together, and they traveled in the southern part of Germany. So I went to visit my relatives. I stayed 3 days with them, and then I joined the tour and traveled around. And it was good. I have never seen them, and they had, just by photographs, of course, and they had never seen me. So it was quite a reunion. We had a nice, enjoyable time.
How did you feel emotionally about seeing, you know, the land that you probably had heard quite a bit
It was,
about?
Yeah. I saw the home that my father lived. No, not my. They didn't live there. That my father lived there with when my parents were first married. They showed me the homestead there, and the home my dad lived in initially was bombed out during the war. So there's a gas station around and showed me, and they took me around and showed me where my parents were married, the little chapel and so on. And it was you know, part of history, part of your genealogy, if you will, and it was something really interesting to be there and to meet cousins that you had never met before and to shake hands and so on.
Speaking German
and speaking English too. There were one of them is now a city planner in Berlin, and he and his children all speak English very well, so it was no problem. And I could still speak German reasonably well, so.
What do you think is inherently German about you? What inside you makes you German?
I think primarily, I don't know. It's my way of my way of living. I try to do the right things, and that was ingrained in us as children, of course. And it's very difficult to put my finger on any specific thing. I think I have a good religious person, it's hard. The food, I enjoy certain foods now. I have to stay away from certain types of the German food so lately, but the worsts and so on, I've got to be very careful of that in the fat-free days that we have today.
Right, the knockwurst.
The knockwurst, oh, yes.
Well, Mr. Kuntz, I want to thank you very much. This has been really a very interesting hour that we've spent.
I enjoyed it, too.
This is Paul Sigrist signing off with Fred Kuntz on Monday, August 28th, 1995, in Brunswick, New York, just outside of Troy. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.